This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
If your love's still strong, ooh, baby.
We are back. We are broadcasting live from the 123 Club Christmas Party at Norwood Hills Country Club. And there is no bigger name here than Jackie Joyner-Kersee, who I spent like more time with Jackie Joyner-Kersee in the last month than I have Monique, I think.
That's not good.
No, that's not good at all. Great to see you, young lady. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Yes.
See her schedule.
Oh, my goodness.
Luncheons, banquets, speaking, being seen, being interviewed.
Oh, God.
I'm amazed that you're here on time, because you may not be the most prompt person I know.
I am the most prompt.
Rock her. We
had insults the guest, right? That's
right.
My job.
One time, you know, I was leaving the center trying to get to a meeting with Frank, and I was running late.
Rockhurst felt that she was so unreliable that they arranged for a car to pick her up to be at this luncheon.
Anybody out there, don't believe that.
Yeah. You're here early for this.
No, they said 11:30, but you never know with the traffic. That's why I'm...
See, I'd say
they may have told you early because they know about your tardiness issues.
Yeah, right. Don't
I've always said, Frank. I'll be mean to anybody. I'll say the most sarcastic thing to anybody except JJK.
Thank you.
Leave that up to me here.
Look at Frank being the bad guy here. Right. We did that at the Marshall Falk Rose.
Oh,
she was
yeah.
on the dais, and we went through, and I was like, everybody's a target. Dick Vermeil, Steven Jackson, Michael Irvin, of course, Marshall, Scott Rosenblum, and then Jackie was up there, and I said, I cannot say anything bad about her.
See, Frank?
All right. I'll turn over a new
Well, actually,
lead.
She wasn't there. She was running behind. No, no, that's not true. It's not true.
Hey, so we were just talking during the break. I've never heard much about your father, who was a terrific athlete at Lincoln. Tell me about him and his role with you.
You know, my dad was very instrumental in me getting involved in athletics, helping my mom to understand. And he was a great athlete himself, but, you know, his career was cut short because him and my mom, you know, had kids as teenagers. And then he had to become, the man, and the father helped raise the family. And so he was a hurdler, a football player, and pretty outstanding athlete.
So your mom maybe wasn't in on you doing sports all the way, and your dad had to say, hey, she's got some skills. She's got to do it?
Oh, yeah. My mother was strictly education and getting a job. But my dad understood what it meant to take us away for the weekend, maybe go to a Junior Olympics track meet, and explain to my mom that it was okay. And, you know, but she just, all she cared about was that, did I get my homework? Did I do the things I was supposed to do? And then maybe she'll think about me going to run or play basketball on the weekend.
Wow.
And when did somebody first say, you could be an Olympian or you have Olympic talent? How young were you when somebody said that was even possible?
You know, I was 14 when I saw the 76 Olympic Games on television. And Coach Nino Fanoi, who was my age group coach, and he always told us all to work hard, be committed to what you were trying to do. And it wasn't until I saw the Olympics that it started to make sense, that I saw women doing what I was trying to do.
You know, the amazing thing is she kind of undersold herself and never was, like, overconfident. Like, we did this luncheon the other day with Rockhurst, and she was saying how, well, I was really struggling with my confidence my freshman year. I said, wait a minute. You started on the basketball team as a freshman at UCLA. You're the best track athlete in the program, and I was struggling with my confidence. We should all struggle that much.
You know,
it's called sandbagging.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing. You leave high school and you go to college, and high school you kind of dominate, but then you go to the next level, and you know you're not performing to the level that you're expecting from yourself. So for me, not being able to consistently jump 21 feet, it was a problem, you know. And I had a problem with the board in the long jump, and just listening, you know, to my coaches, and really just getting out of my own way. And so building that confidence up, knowing what it takes to be one of the best.
What was it like when you first saw UCLA? I mean, we know there's some rough streets in East St. Louis, and to be recruited, I'm sure you could have gone anywhere you wanted. But when you first saw that campus, what was it like?
Oh, it was amazing, you know, all the walking, you know, because it's one thing about most college campuses is that, you know, all the academic stuff is up the upper part of the campus. All the athletics is up, down, and then you have the dormitory. But just going out to Los Angeles and the environment, the weather, you know, everything was just amazing, you know. And but then the challenges of, you know, wanting to, you know, be one of the best was just a part of the journey. It wasn't that was my mindset. It was that, you know, they no different than me. I know, and I'm one of many All-Americans, All-Staters that decided to come to this university.
So you and Bob took this to a science. It wasn't just you being a great athlete. He's one of the great coaches in any sport at any time. How about the story about him and you in that hotel and actually running through, like, the lobby or to get your steps, because he didn't like the number of steps. So you're actually practicing at the hotel.
Yes, and that was a part of building that confidence, because I kept having problems with connecting my steps to the board. And so we go to the senior nationals, and Bobby asked me about what problems I was having. I said, I keep having problems with my steps. So we went into the hotel hallway from my room and measure out my steps. And Bobby asked me to run down the hallway, hoping no one would open the doors and run into me.
But room service.
Ran down the hallway, and I was point on. And he said, the only difference it's going to be is you're going to transfer what we just did in this hallway outdoors, and might have some elements of the wind might be in my face or in my back, but we can make those adjustments. And that gave me the confidence. And then I go into that out to that meeting and then jump my lifetime best.
I'm going to look twice before I open a hotel door now. You never know.
Some guy in his boxers trying to get ice. Isn't that Jackie Joyner Kirshen?
You know, the signs of it and the timing of it, you know. So if you're in the hallway long enough, you can calculate how often people come in and out of their doors.
When you talked about confidence and nerves and anxiety, just handling the pressure, give me an idea at the Olympics. How can you not look around? The world is literally watching you. How did you sort of compartmentalize that and still do your thing?
You know, it's amazing. As an athlete, you know, when someone asks you about, oh, do you feel pressure? You never want to give in to that, because then the first thing people think, oh, you're weak. And you don't realize how much undue pressure you are carrying while trying to compete, you know, at the pinnacle for you is the Olympic Games. And for me, it was more of focusing on what I was prepared to do and not get caught up in all the hoopla and everything else everybody else wanted you to do, and how you keep that at a minimum, but then also your team and the people around you really help fight off some of that pressure that you can put on yourself that you don't even know that you're really carrying.
Do you still see some of the greats, your contemporaries, whether it's Carl Lewis or others that were so prominent during your heyday? Is there a track and field circuit that you bump into these folks?
Oh, yes. You know, we all do a lot with USA Track and Field. We see each other on the collegiate level. Carl and Leroy Burrell. Carl is one of the volunteer coaches at the University of Houston. Leroy Burrell is the head coach. You know, Gail Devers and I, we're still great friends. And I see a lot of my, you know, Valerie Briscoe, you know, just the track circuit, you know, when you go to the different track meets, and then it's at our convention where you see some of the people who came before you and some of them that's coming after you, that it's really kind of great.
I'm sort of amazed that we get really involved during the Olympics. We love watching the track and field. They can put it in prime time and everybody will watch. But then we get away from the Olympics and the college has some good events, but we don't pay as much attention to it. I would think that has to be kind of frustrating, that your sport, while we fall in love with it for a couple of weeks every four summers, we sort of forget about it as a country.
Oh, yes. You know, and I think and I hope that with the United States Track and Field, you know, continue to change that, that model, you know, because some of our premier, well, not some of them, our premier and our best athletes come from our collegiate system. You know, but then you also have the grassroots programs, which funnel those athletes into the collegiate system, and to be able to highlight, you know, collegiate athletes, because those are going to be the ones who are going to make our Olympic teams and go on and represent us at the Olympic level. It would be great to have a circuit, not just in Europe, that you can have one throughout the United States that can get the support, the funding, because everyone know the premier athletes, but there are some athletes that's fourth, fifth, sixth, borderline, just need that support to go on and become, you know, one of the best.
Thank you so much for stopping by. When we think of St. Louis sports, we think of you. You're such a great ambassador for our town. Have a great holiday. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and I'm always on time.
I would say he ended nice, didn't he?
Yeah.
He ended nice.
I love her like a sister, just not one of my own.
The Olympic great Jackie Joyner-Kersee joining us here at the 123 Club. Christmas luncheon, they're filing in some of the more colorful outfits I have seen.
Oh, my goodness,
in a long time.
Very nice, yes.
Red plaid. I got to get me one of the red pants.
Yes.
Just for the holidays.
Very nice.
Or perhaps for a Cardinal playoff game.
And we are delighted to be joined by one of the great umpires in Major League Baseball history, the pride of St. Louis, Dave Phillips. Dave, happy holidays. Welcome to the program. How are you today, sir?
I am just doing phenomenal. I'm sitting here with the two best announcers in St. Louis, so, my gosh, you can't get any better than that. With the 123 Club Christmas party, we're in tune.
How many years for you in this club?
Well, it's sad to say that I'm third in seniority here, which means that all that means is I'm old. And I got into the club in 1980.
Wow.
And all that means, I was a young puppy then.
Do you show up at the Pasta House on Mondays a lot?
Yeah, well, when I'm in town, I'm usually in town most of the summer, but we go to Florida in the wintertime. I have a home down at Bonita Beach, and so I stay down there in the wintertime. But, yeah, we go there all the time. It's a great club, a lot of fun, good guys. A lot of turnover in the last 20 years, but...
Yeah, I imagine.
And I would think any time there's a debated call, football, baseball, basketball, they're like, let's ask Dave about this. Did they blow the call? Like, any time there's an official in the crosshairs,
yeah,
they turn to you.
Well, we had Rich Hantak in the club, and Rich had to resign some time ago, and so it was always a little bit less cumbersome for me with the football, because I don't know much about anything, let alone football, and... But I get criticized all the time or yelled about the strike zone all the time in that club. So guys have different opinions on the strike zone all the time.
You think they'll go to the automatic, like the computerized? I would hate that. Like where the strike zone is just a machine.
I seriously doubt that. I really do. I mean, you know, the umpires basically do a really good job. They put the square on the thing and give the fans a little look at what's going on and so forth. But, I mean, that's what they do. They do it day after day, game after game. And they wouldn't have anybody else to blame if, in fact, that they didn't have – You know, if they strike out, I mean, who else is going to yell at
right.
this guy and say, "Who? What the heck?"
That's part of the drama,
yeah,
part
absolutely.
Of the theater of being at the game.
The theater of the game there is, and that is very true, and I don't think that will ever change. I think it will always be the way.
Whitey Herzog is here today. What's your best exchange with Whitey over the years during a game?
Whitey was very, very fair as a manager. I mean that sincerely. I mean, and I think it throws back to he was really a good guy as a – I'm sure a player, and then as a, I first ran across Whitey as a farm director for the Mets when I was in the minor leagues, and he was extremely fair then with us. He'd always make sure we had days off and things of that nature. And the only times, you know, I don't remember ever having an argument with Whitey. Actually, I really don't. I worked two World Series of which he was involved in with the Cardinals, and of course a number of years with the Kansas City Royals. But
so were you part of the '85?
87 and 82.
Oh, so
I
you didn't have the
sure
controversial
that I was
one.
Not in the 85.
Yeah. To be clear, 82, yeah. 87.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you were an American League guy. Now they're all over. Do you like that they do it where they work both sides?
Oh,
both
I think it works out really well for Major League Baseball and the umpires. They go coast to coast now. There's less familiarity. It's less travel. There's a whole lot of good things about it. I think at one time when they first initiated the thing, I think the umpires were probably a little skeptical because everybody wanted, you know, they have their own identity with the National and the American. But I think it's really a good, positive thing for to call it MLB. Takes a little bit of the way from the announcers who like to say, well, the American League's a high ball umpire and National League's low ball and all that kind of. Now it's all one thing, and I think that really, really has worked out well.
The worst guy you had to deal with over the years, without question, was Earl Weaver, the St. Louisan, correct?
Well, I would throw Earl Weaver in the same boat with Dick Williams. Dick Williams was and he was also from St. Louis and also from Beaumont High School. But Earl Weaver was really a genuinely a pain in the tail, and I say that nicely. I had Earl also in the minor leagues in Rochester, and interestingly enough, people think he was bad in the big leagues. I can't tell you how bad he was in the minor leagues, even when he's scratching to get to the big leagues. If you would throw him out in the minor leagues, he would do anything and everything. And one thing he did when we had him, we threw him out of a game in Rochester, he took third base when he finally left. And he well, it's not like the major leagues where they run out with another base and put it in.
He
goes down and locks himself in the clubhouse, and we got to go down. We don't. Somebody has to go down and beg him to give the base back so we can keep going with the game. So Earl was really, really kind of a classic guy.
But the best Weaver story, though, was when you guys were staying at the same hotel, you and your wife, he and his wife.
Yeah, that was at the American Airlines Golf Classic in St. Croix. We were all invited there, and Earl had a few too many drinks. I guess I could say that honestly. And we were going back to the hotel, and I didn't know back to our rooms, and I didn't have any idea where he was staying or I was staying. And so I said, "Hey, where are you going?" He said, "Well, I'm going this way." I said, "Well, so am I." Turns out he's next door to me. He's living next door to me, and it was an elegant, elegant resort, and that with the high lofted roofs and so on. And my wife and I are in there, and he's him and his wife get in an absolutely unbelievable discussion, let's call it. And we could hear everything, and you know, my wife's going, and I said, "Well, you see, this is what I have to deal with, you know, on the field." And the next day, he and I are driving to a he's going to be in the same car as I am with our wives. And it comes out, and he's, "Hey, Davey, how you doing?" And all of a sudden, we're buddies, you know, over the years. And all these things, and this, that, whatever. And, of course, his wife, "I love you, honey, and see you later." But, I mean, it was like.
And you just were hearing F-bombs and screaming and yelling all night long.
I can't even go to where what was being said. But Earl and his wife were really special. I enjoyed them. It's funny, he used to say to us after he retired, "I don't know why I was such a jerk." And his wife said, "Well, that's what I told you all along." So it's kind of fun.
All right. Gaylord Perry wrote a book called Me and the Spitter. He wrote it during his career. But the first time he was ever ejected was by you, Dave Phillips. What do you remember about that event?
Well, I remember it was cushion night. And I had more cushions to go home with in Seattle than anybody else. Because after I'd ejected him, he was, I had all these cushions being thrown on the field. And they were pissed off. Aggravated, whatever you want to say. But anyway, how it happened was in the fifth inning, you had to check the ball 100 times with him. Everybody's asking to check the ball. So in the fifth inning, Essien's catching, Jim Essien, who ended up managing the Cubs, he's catching. I said, "Let me see the ball before the guy came up there." Because he said to me, "The batter's come up, he's checked the ball." Threw the ball to me, and I looked at it, and I looked at it again. And I could see my fingerprint in the ball, but he's warming up. So I look out at him, and I got the ball in my hand. So I walk out. As I start to walk out, he throws his hands up in the air, and he says, "I didn't put anything on the ball." I said, "I didn't say anything yet, but I'm just going to tell you that we're warming up right now. Consider this your warning. If you throw anything illegal or that I deem to be illegal, you will be ejected." Well, it's like going down Highway 70 and getting a warning ticket. You think, "Hey, man, that's a great deal." And he was happy. He thought I was a pretty good umpire at that point. Left him go. I came in the seventh inning. Bases are loaded. Miller's batting, Rick Miller for the Red Sox. And Renee Lashman comes out to take him out. I actually scratched him off. I thought they were going to take him out. I look up, and Perry's still standing there, and Renee's walking back. I find out the next day from Renee that Perry said, "I guarantee I'll get him out.
Just trust me, I got an idea of what might work." Yeah.
And sure enough, he throws a pitch, and I mean, it was so obvious. I mean, it's like a ball rolling on this table, and all of a sudden it falls to the ground. And as soon as I seen it, I mean, it's kind of like if you warn your children and you say this and that, this is going to happen if that happens. I done told him, and here we are. And so it was just a no-brainer, and he was ejected. And, of course, as I said, it wasn't one of my more fun nights in the game because I had a whole lot of cushions to take home after the game.
How about your best exchange with a young Tony La Russa, who was a pretty fiery guy in Chicago when you had him, I imagine, and Oakland?
You know, I like Tony. I'm not trying to be a politician here, but I had a really good relationship with him as well. I do remember one time, though, in Chicago, I had a play at second base of which he was coming out to talk about, and we were in about the seventh or eighth inning, and he was very slow, methodical manager and doing all kinds of the game was taking forever all the time. So he come out there, and I really didn't think the play was that close. So I said to him before he could even say anything, I said, "Tony," I said, for God's sakes, I said, you know, if you keep managing the way you're managing, we're going to be out here, and you're going to have to start these games at 6:30 if you want to get on the news at 10 o'clock. I mean, we have 3-4 hour games every night with you. And this is before he said anything. He kind of looked at me befuddled, like he wanted to talk to me about a play, and now he's talking to me about. After the game, he knocks on the door and he comes in and he says, Dave, can I talk to you? I said, yeah. What is it? He said, you realize that I'm the most senior manager in this league. And I said, well, I hadn't thought about it, but I didn't really care either. What's the point? He says, you kind of embarrassed me out there today. And I said, well, I didn't mean to embarrass you, Tony. I'm just telling you. I mean, it's for God. You've got to move the game along and you're coming out and argue about everything. And so anyway, from that point on, we had a phenomenal relationship. And interestingly enough, I did a commercial with him in St. Louis here. And afterwards, I asked him if he would sign a ball. When he first came into St. Louis in 96, they asked me to do some of these commercials of whether you like light beer, you like this, you like that, whatever. And he signed the ball, and he said, thanks for making me a professional. And I knew exactly what he was talking about, was about that, because that's the only time we had any real problems.
But. And you did write a book, didn't you? Because you were there for Disco Demolition. You rejected Gaylord Perry. You were there on the George Brett Pine Tar game, the Albert Bell cork bat that they had to crawl through the ceiling,
Martin,
to get
you know
to.
You know my career better than I know my own. Yeah, that's true. I was in all those things, unfortunately. I did write a book. Funny, I kid people about this. It was amazing how I wrote a book because I had just learned to read about 3 weeks before that. So I'm very fortunate, though.
Dave, we appreciate you stopping by. Thank you so much.
Thank
Sounds
you for
like
having
Dave
me.
Dave was a pioneer for pace of play issues in baseball.
Yes,
yes. We need
he was early on Tony to speed it up. We don't need 18 pitching changes, right?
I don't know if you got another second, but I'll tell you another quick story. He sent out the second baseman to tell me in right field in about the eighth inning, Bookie or somebody by that name came over. He said, Davey, Tony wanted me to tell you, out of respect for you, he's not going to be changing the pitchers in the eighth inning. And because I used to go like this to him, you have Eckersley, and Eckersley was a no-brainer. I mean, you give the ball to Eck and boom,
leave
boom,
it
boom.
Alone.
Yeah, so anyway, Tony's a good guy.
Thank you so much,
guys.
The great Dave Phillips joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Before we go to break, quick word about McBride Homes, Missouri's largest home builder, has a great deal for you this holiday season. Buy a new McBride home, receive $5,000 to $10,000 off the base price. That's right, instantly get up to $10,000 in savings towards your new home. And McBride has nearly 100 market homes ready for a quick move-in, marked down with tremendous year-end savings. With nearly 40 communities across the Metro St. Louis, there's a McBride home for every price point in every part of town, so there's no reason to wait. Visit McBrideHomes.com for details. Maryville sponsors our phone lines. Go to maryville.edu and find out more information about that terrific university. Seen Ted Simmons walk by, Joe Wiley, the Billiken great. Oh, there's the great Bob Bunton from Parkway North. What a career he had. He finished up this season at Parkway North. A lot of big names. You're recognizing everybody, aren't you?
It's kind of fun to sit. It's like we're watching the parade go by.
Absolutely.
All names that we know, colorful outfits, holiday. Chris May, the Billiken. Maybe we'll grab the Billiken's AD, talk a little basketball as well.
Do you see him over there right now?
Just walk through. Mike Claiborne, a little slimmer these days.
Oh, my goodness. I was
shocked.
You
don't want to offend anybody, but I think he's losing weight.
Oh, my goodness. He looks great.
I hope he's okay.
I think so. I think he was actually at Kimball's last night, so maybe he's putting a little more
He's doing just fine.
Yes. We'll take a break. We're broadcasting live from Norwood Hills Country Club, site of the 1-2-3 Club Christmas Party.